It's been a while since I've seen one of these, man.
These days, moving 737 classics is a pretty rare thing. We see maybe two or three a year, and usually freighters reaching the end of their service life. But in 2024, we got a call to move a few 737-300s with passenger seats, retiring from service with Canadian North and going into service with a startup carrier in Tbilisi, Georgia. After planning the eastbound normal route through Europe, we showed up to a plane lacking 833-capable radios and a paint slot that couldn't be missed. The client approved the cost increase and we blasted off the long way, westbound around not flat Earth. The 737-300 can't make Edmonton to Honolulu nonstop, so we hopped over to Vancouver to top off the tanks. We still had four long legs ahead of us on the day, and all of them were completely over water as we traversed the Pacific Ocean with fuel stops in Hawaii, Majuro in the U.S. Marshall Islands, and Guam before parking the airplane in the Philippines for a few days.
Take off using left from Charlie. We'll contact Squadron Automatic 172.
It would take over 20 hours total to cross the Pacific, including the fuel stops. But as a crew of three, we'd take turns in the cockpit, rotating one pilot into rest about every 4 hours. A little 737 isn't made for this kind of day, so there really wasn't anywhere comfy to sleep, so we'd have to get creative.
Thrust is set.
Pressure 108,
80, thrust all.
V1, rotate.
Positive rate.
If I had to make a top 10 list for flight routings, mid-pack crossings land easily at number 1. There's little to do and minimal radio chatter on the oceanic stretches between the islands, and the weather is always warm. Island hopping is an integral part of ferry flying, and I've been to most of the islands and atolls between Hawaii and Asia, and Chile and New Zealand. Majuro, where we'd stop after Hawaii, used to be a regular stop we'd make at least once a month, but since the 737NG and A319 and 20 have much better range, and the 757 and wide bodies can easily make 8 hours in the air, we don't get there nearly as much these days. At top of climb, it was my turn to get the first nap. I located the bag of supplies we picked up at a local store in Edmonton and headed to the aft galley, which I'd convert into a bare-bones crew rest area. Most of the time, we can create a pretty comfortable space, but the store by the airport didn't have much of a selection, and I wasn't real optimistic about what we'd bought.
Well, an air mattress is not the most comfortable thing known to man, but when you're on a 20-hour trip, crew of three, and you need to take a rest break, coach seats just aren't going to cut it. So, got a little air mattress here. I'm going to attempt to inflate. This thing looks more like a rowboat than an air mattress, but. This seems like as good a spot as any to inflate it. Well, I don't know how anybody's sleeping in this thing. My Lord, it's so small. I thought it was a twin bed, but it's basically like a child's bed. Holy crap. It's survivable. And a pillow and a sleeping bag. Exactly call this a good place to rest, but between the curtain, dim that out or wait till it's nighttime, turn out the lights, got a nice quiet space in the back of the airplane where we can actually get better sleep than sitting upright in a coach seat. So, you know, better than nothing.
You're just gonna have to trust me that I was able to ball up enough to fit in that rubber raft. About 4 hours passed in seconds before I woke up stiff as a board and limped up to the cockpit to take over just before landing on Oahu. For a few years now, the handling agents at Honolulu International have been telling us that they have no room on the ramp for us to make a tech stop. So instead, we've been using a different airport a few miles down the road in Kalaeloa. The John Rogers Airport used to be a military airfield, but now it's home to a bunch of light aircraft from flight schools, a Coast Guard air station, and a large, somewhat dilapidated concrete apron where aircraft of any size can stop for fuel while crossing the Pacific.
Flighting
now 275, expect extra special flight 24.
Right, 275,
we're thank you so much, flying 1381. No matter what, 272 heading 260. Right, turn 260 automatic 172. Delta 797 heavy, contact approach, 5-1 airplane 1. Thank you. We descended in over the southeastern part of Oahu, passing over Cocoa Head and the reef runway for HNL. Then we started a visual descent in the right turn to line up for Kalaeloa.
Clear visual 4 right, medic 172.
Clear visual.
The runway there is plenty long at 7,900 feet, but it's kind of tough to pick out visually, especially at night, and the winds really get whipping because of where it's positioned on the island.
Landing gear.
Down 3 green.
Down 3 green. Flaps.
We've got 40.
40 green light. Landing check is complete.
1,000.
That was just normal. Oh, they must have like a, that's weird, man. There's a tanker out there with 2 tugs and like that oil spill like fence around it.
Uh-oh. Somebody's in trouble.
They must be leaking. Dusty.
Yep.
We bring all kinds of planes through JRF, including wide bodies. Recently, we've been moving 767s between the US and Singapore for cargo conversion, and it can get pretty sporty in a heavy jet, especially when tired after 13 plus hours of cruising.
What are all those white tents? I've never seen that before.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. I haven't seen it either.
Recently erected.
Minimums. Some weird stuff.
Because of the increased challenge, our crews have to qualify by flying with Bob or myself before getting cut loose to operate as PIC through Kalaeloa.
15, man, there's a little gust, 40, little dropout.
30, 20, 10.
Spoilers. Reverse. Much easier than in a 7.6. 80 knots.
Atlantic 172, turn left, Bravo 1, hold short, rolling follow.
Left Bravo 1, short of 4 left, Atlantic 172. Left turn short of the parallel.
All right.
God, yeah, there goes the SG fail again.
Has anybody been...
Steve Giordano fell.
Has anybody been doing logbook?
No. I was thinking about that after we landed. I was like, anybody keeping track of time? I guess we can make shit up.
I mean, there's times in the on the channel.
Yeah. Can always make it up.
Largely right on the schedule, so we can get the hours.
Yeah.
SG fail means the symbol generator that paints Bob's electronic instruments had failed. This was an intermittent issue throughout the trip and appeared after landing and cleared with a reset on the ground. After the long flight to Hawaii, we were all itching to head outside and breathe some fresh air and stretch our legs.
I don't know what the fuck the guy's hand signals were doing.
Other than a walk around, there isn't much to do in John Rogers, but I usually hitch a ride over to Millionaire's modular FBO building to grab some hot coffee and sign the handling invoice.
Yeah, there's always a bunch of military stuff here, man. It seems like it's good business for you guys. It's probably easy to deal with, right? Those guys, self-sufficient.
Just the fuel of
this. As we taxied out for departure, we passed a Coast Guard C-130 getting a bird bath to wash away the corrosive salt after a sortie. We then lined up on runway 4 right, which was the same runway we landed on. The wind was still howling, so we expected a lot of turbulence on departure. Taking off north out of Kalaeloa puts you right in the arrival corridor for HNL, so we follow the procedure to avoid it. This means an early and steep right turnout to the south as soon as possible, usually around 800 feet above the ground, which comes up really quick. Today, we'd be getting rocked by the strong winds at the same time. This would be Bob's final flying leg on this trip. I'd take over the left seat in Majuro as the flying pilot to Guam, and Pat would get the last leg into Clark.
Reset. 80.
Ferry flying is always a team effort, and there's no place for ego in a nomadic cockpit. We all share the duties in order to get the job done.
B1, rotate. B2. Positive rate, 0. Jesus Christ. Departure, pneumatic 172, good day.
As usual, our route to Majuro was along an airway called R584 with its familiar en route fixes, McFly, Manry, and Maza. There's hardly ever any traffic on the route. Communication is limited to position reports with San Francisco over the long-range high-frequency radios. There's almost nothing to see at all out the windows but water stretching as far as the eye can see. This is an extremely desolate part of the planet. But almost nothing means there is something to see as long as the weather's good. Johnston Atoll. I've covered it before on Cockpit Casual, and I've spoke about its history as a remote military facility, chemical weapons storage facility, and nuclear anti-satellite missile test site. The Pacific Ocean is so big, it encompasses nearly half of the Earth. And Johnston is so remote, it's really close to the geographical center of the Pacific. Despite its storied past, Johnston is now completely uninhabited. Most of the structures were hauled away years ago, and nature has reclaimed most of the paved areas, including the old runway. I often think about this fascinating place and wonder if it'll ever become relevant again. And I recently learned that the atoll is actually back in the news. The Department of Defense has apparently selected the location as a test landing site for the reusable orbital rocket cargo delivery system, which they say will be able to deliver a heavy payload anywhere on Earth in mere hours. Based on what I've read, Johnston Island is where they plan to conduct the lander tests. Other than Johnston, there'd be no more land until reaching Majuro. Slipping beneath us, the endless loop of deep blue ocean dotted with scattered clouds. The soundtrack, cell call tones, and constant garbled chatter over the HF radios. And then 100 miles out, we start to descend. There's nothing visible yet, because Majuro is so small.
Yeah, this is brilliant, man. Majuro is, like you mentioned, Bob, it's like the staple of the ferry business.
Yep, always has been. And it hasn't changed one bit.
No.
I haven't spent much time here, but I've passed through over 100 times. It's one of those places that you'll never forget, and of all the tiny atolls in the South Pacific, Majuro is positioned best for getting airplanes between North America and Southeast Asia and Australia. The tiny landmass is little more than a coral reef atop a huge mountain that's all but completely submerged beneath the waves. The place is about as isolated as you can get from the rest of the world, and its scenic beauty remains a secret to most. Majuro sees less than 10,000 visitors every year and lacks the development and resources to handle a tourism economy, but that's starting to change a little bit.
So we used to come in here using the radar.
Yeah, map it out.
Yeah, you'd map it out there to the kind of end of the tail out there.
Yeah.
Come out there and you just follow it all the way in.
You won't find any massive resorts here, but the nature more than makes up for that. Water is crystal clear and the coral reef is visible descending gradually into the turquoise shallows in the center of the atoll and steeply into the dark blue depths immediately along the outer parts.
Nomadic 172 arrived Majuro 0603. What?
Yeah, I didn't catch what he's saying.
Five. 0603. Mike Alpha Juliet Majuro.
Does he know?
HF.
Is anybody checking anything?
Seriously.
They have no clue that we're out in the middle of the Pacific.
Thank you.
I feel like I'd swim in this.
We haven't had any rain in a while.
Yeah, really? Oh, man. Is this the dry season? Climate change.
A fuel stop quick turn takes roughly an hour. We got really lucky to arrive with just about an hour of daylight remaining, and with the new camera gear in hand, I was itching to get a few good clips of the impending island sunset, so Bob agreed to oversee the fueling so Pat and I could roam around a little with the camera rig.
Did you tell him?
Yeah.
You did?
Well, yeah, I've got to go do it.
Oh, because they're standing there already.
Yeah,
no,
I already got
to go. Oh, okay. Okay, cool. Yeah.
Most locations that we fuel stop at don't want the liability of a possible fuel spill in the event the auto shutoff valves fail, so they require one of us to man the fueling panel on the aircraft and take responsibility for closing them. The leg to Guam was only 4 hours, so we didn't need to top off, and the fuel in Guam was cheaper, so we didn't need to tanker extra. About 3,000 gallons would get the job done. With Pat in tow and a camera in hand, I headed over to the old air stairs, which the ramp agent suggested as a good location to get a nice shot of the sunset. The section of land that the airport was built on is only slightly wider than the actual runway, and from about 12 feet up on the stairs, I could easily see both the north and south coastlines. Right over the fence, Lagoon Road, the island's main thoroughfare stretching from Lara Beach on the west end all the way to Darrett on the northeast corner. This is the main road that takes you everywhere there is to go with a car on Majuro. Back in 2015, we operated a 737-400 ferry from Taiwan to Miami. Because I was out flying a Dash 8 in Russia, I wasn't on it. Two of our contract pilots flew the mission, and it turned into one of the more memorable ones. The thing was in rough shape, portable HF kit, peeling paint, the works. The APU was inoperative and deferred for the trip, so we advised all of our ground handlers along the route to be ready with an air cart, which is a piece of ground equipment that pushes high-pressure air into the aircraft's pneumatic system in order to start the engines. On that fateful trip, Majuro's air cart broke down while my crew was starting up for Honolulu, and it turned into a massive ordeal that dragged out for 10 days. The crew was marooned here and got to experience life on the atoll for over a week, and I've always regretted the fact that I wasn't there. It's a long story, but we ultimately got them out by having a buddy start hose fabricated in the United States. This allows a second aircraft to donate bleed air to a recipient aircraft for the purposes of an engine start. 10 days later, the part arrived, and my crew enlisted the help of a transiting Asia-Pacific 727 freighter crew to supply the bleed air needed to get them out. Although Bob has stayed overnight in Majuro on a trip before I started working with him, that crazy 10-day stint was the one and only time I could or would have spent any time here. It's on my bucket list for sure, but I really don't like getting stuck anywhere with no end in sight, so I think I'll eventually make the trip back as a regular tourist.
Let's wait to cross the street so I don't get killed. There's a child driving. Did you see that? There was literally a child driving.
We obviously couldn't venture too far, but we did get to leave the property for a few minutes, so I could at least say that I left the airport. I had done this once before years ago, and I took my lunch out to the rocks for a little picnic by the water.
I heard Kelly Slater has a place here.
He came here.
Okay. I heard like a rumor that he has a house somewhere, I think, on part of the island, or...
Apparently, Majuro has grown in popularity with the big wave surfers. He said that there was now a surfing resort on one of the outer islands. I don't think I'll be tackling any big waves anytime soon, but the idea that there's a nice place to stay here has only fueled my desire to come back sometime. I'm gonna do it, it's just a matter of when. As we walked back to the plane, I tried to remember the last time I passed through. I'm pretty sure it had been since COVID, which was the last time we moved narrow bodies between Australia and the States.
I was here like a lot during COVID because we were bringing those airplanes to and from Australia, those Virgin Australia ones, and we couldn't even get food, you know?
Yeah.
Some of your guys hooked us up, got us food, and brought it out.
I returned to the plane so I could start punching in the route for the next leg up to Guam. When I got to the airplane, there were half a dozen people on it, and when I glanced at the camera, I noticed Bob's mic was delivering sound. Turns out he was giving a little airplane tour to a few children, who I assume belonged to the ground handling agents. As usual, Bob always ready and willing to introduce aviation to the next generation.
They want to sit in the cockpit? You want to sit in the cockpit? You fly it. You gotta sit in the seat.
It's how we start the engines.
Yeah.
How we do a lot of different things.
What is this for?
Which one?
This one.
That button?
Yeah.
That turns off the autopilot.
Oh.
So the airplane will fly itself with autopilot.
With the gorgeous sunset in the rear view, it was back to business. We still had two legs to go, and all of it would be under the cover of darkness.
We had the route in already?
Yeah. NDJ. November Delta Juliet. 10 East 60.
Fortunately, there aren't many waypoints out over the Pacific in this area, so building the user fixes
East
went pretty fast.
12 East 50. Clans, CLANS. Runway and a back taxi down 7.
With the sun below the horizon in Majuro, we now faced a not unexpected challenge that we only know about through experience. As you now know, there's no ATC in Majuro, just a UNICOM frequency, so there's no way to locally pick up an IFR clearance.
Well, we're going to try HF first.
Instead, we're cleared through San Francisco radio over HF comms. This works okay during the daylight hours, but after sunset, the high-frequency waves struggle to reach the ionosphere while sitting on the ramp. Not sure whether it's the structures nearby that block our transmissions, but it strangely has always been the case with the shorter narrow-body aircraft. The fix for this is to taxi out to the far end of the runway and hold position on the numbers and transmit from there. 9 times out of 10, this works out. When it doesn't, we need to taxi back again close to the terminal where we can get on Wi-Fi to place a phone call to Air Inc. This also works, but it can be a challenge to meet the 10-minute clearance void time they issue us, which only gives us a short amount of time to taxi out and depart.
By 0802, time now 0744. Over. It's at time 0742. We are cleared from Majuro to Guam. Nomadic 172, over. Right, do we copy secondary 11384? We'll call you airborne, Nomadic 172. Jesus.
You ready?
Majuro traffic, O-Matic 172, runway 7. We are taking off, gonna make a right turn out, and east or westbound. Or whatever turn you're gonna fucking make. Yeah, you got 100 knots. Hold. B1, rotate. 2. Positive rate. Six.
These long-haul ferry flights, island-hopping across the Pacific in short-range narrow-bodies are grueling, but I love them. the quintessential ferry pilot mission and a rite of passage for those new to the business, I always try to claim these trips when they're on our books, and I always try to get our younger co-pilots on one when the opportunity presents. I don't know how many more times we'll be stopping in Majuro, as modern aircraft seem to easily exceed the 8-hour endurance mark, so each time I'm there, it crosses my mind that it could be the last. It's funny how the old types just kind of die off. It doesn't feel like that long ago MD-80 trips came up every couple weeks and the occasional 737NG felt like a luxury amid a steady diet of classics and Jurassics. The 757 and 767 ferries have definitely slowed up in the last year, and before we know it, I'm certain I'm going to come to the realization that I haven't flown one in years. I'm guessing I'll probably do two or three more 75, 76 proficiency checks before I shelve that type rating too. And I figure I'll probably have to go get an A350 done in the near future as well. Still don't have that one. Pat's mainly an Airbus guy and just started flying Boeings a couple years ago. This was his first and possibly last opportunity to fly a classic, so we gave him the last leg into his home country of the Philippines. His wife Pia would pick us up upon landing at Clark and drive Bob and I down to Manila to catch some rest before airlining off to the next one the following day.
I don't know, I haven't slept much on any of these legs actually. But I'll be sleeping good on that United flight to San Francisco tomorrow.
Yeah, it's like 12 hours, man.
I'll be sleeping for 10 of it.
Clark was the end of the line for Bob and I, but the trip was only halfway complete. Wes would arrive in the morning, enjoy a day of rest, and then join Pat to complete the mission, getting this old bird delivered to Tbilisi. Bob and I had a busy few weeks ahead of us, with a bunch of different wide bodies ready to move all over the world. We were also a month away from losing our currency on the 737 and A320, so we needed to carefully plan out the next few operations, leaving a hole in the schedule to shoot down to Orlando for a couple of check rides. The life of a ferry pilot is unpredictable, with no clear picture of where we're going next and when. But it's that uncertainty that keeps it all interesting. I knew we had two A330s and a 787 on tap, but at that point I couldn't remember what was first and where it was. Doesn't matter. I'd be there, ready to roll and ready for anything.